or some people have posited in a multiverse that different universes have different set constants. And it's only in the universes where the constants are amenable to suns and planets and life, where they sit around and they say, gee, why are we alive? As opposed to the multiverse versions where everything explodes and it's all a bunch of photons. But that's the best I can give you. I cannot give you a definitive answer of why the speed of light is that number.
And that is what Mr. Gordon made to physics. He put disturbance by his thinking. So the Sabine Hofstadter, that was in Forbes Science, was also moved with it, and she made some comments about the theory of everything, and the number of classical physics and quantum physics, the scientists decided to pay more attention to classical form of understanding it. Let me jump. It's humoristic that doctor of medicine was able to move so many guys who are in this profession. I'm not gonna go deeply into every that stuff because the time is ending, and many of the audience might just not be interested with it. But Dr. Sabine Hofstadter went into some conclusion. I'm gonna quickly read it to you, and we don't have to answer it. If the bump goes away, this would catapult us into what has become known as nightmare, a scenario for the LHC. That's for Higgs and nothing else. Many particles physics are afraid that scenario, because if it comes true, it will leave them without guardians. Loss is a rapidly multiplying models that threaten the block of sunlight. Without some new physics, everyone is concerned and will have to have nothing to work with. In other words, for 50 years. In other words, what she was saying is that if we take the 10 reasons why physicists cannot solve theory of everything made by Mr. Gordon, would be that we wouldn't be able to do anything valuable because we're going to be lost in space. And to achieve it. It was not for me to expect the answer. It was something just to prove that somebody who's interested in physics can make so much attention to himself and his theory and to his field. I agree with you, Dr. Roy. Thank you very much, and let's go to the space report.
Okay, Wesley, thank you for participating. Thanks, everyone, for participating. We don't really have any links or anything because we ever didn't really get to anything in the news. And, you know, one night that I don't spend talking about the coronavirus, you know, I'm not going to miss that. Once again, I just want to remind people that if you have any mailbag questions, if you have any topics, any questions, any technical questions, any scientific questions, or scientific topics, or you have any puzzles, or if you want me to pass something on to Paul, you just have to email us at mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And as I mentioned before, if I had done any stories, you can go to roy.ac2gs.com and get links for the stories. You can find a link there tonight from a story that Paul is going to give you soon enough. Also, there's the chat room, which was very active this week, and you can get there from chat.ac2gs.com. And there's a stream of audio. If you can't listen on the radio and you can't use IRLP and you can't use Echo Link, you can always point your browser to technet.ac2gs.com, and we stream the audio. And as always, for the last more than 12 years of the Limark Technical Net, starring Dick K2RIW, is available via Mike KC2NJI's website, which is called amateurradio.tv. And once again, I want to thank everyone out there who participated tonight in this little mini wake in memory of a great, great man, Dick K2RIW. Paul, it's time for the space report, I would assume.
WS2N. Yes, sir. Let me see if I have it. Very good. And, yeah, and we don't have that many topics, you know, with the virus out there, that things are slowing a lot of projects down. So, maybe we'll be a little brief. We'll see. One thing Dick always did was ask a lot of Dick. One question after the other. I would get onto a topic, you know, some Dick topic, and he would start asking questions about it. Next thing I know, Dick. Dick. But month after month, we're researching things, and sure enough, some of the answers would pop up in future nets. So that's what happened. Let me drop it. I got 86, and I used to listen to Dick before that on Sunday nights, and eventually he started doing tech nets also on Lockfield. For a while, there was one guy, Lloyd, WB2ZITT, used to be, on with him on a regular basis, just like you mentioned, HIP, early on the 7000 machine. So, you know, a lot of people have worked with him, and, you know, over the years, we had comment or question before I go through a relatively short list here that I have. This is WS2N. Good. I know Dick would have loved all these topics. He used to talk about next person to land on Mars. Are we ever going to make it, you know? And, of course, it could have happened if things weren't delayed over the years. You know, once the straight. We're going to go for the moon. Oh, no, now we're going to back over Mars, and now we're going back to the moon, and that movement is back to Mars again. So, because of all these changes, maybe none of us will make, live to see the next Mars landing, or the first Mars landing. But I hope we do. And first thing I wanted to talk about was the a recent launch up to the International Space Station with the Progress machine, Progress cargo vehicle that took off from Kazakhstan, successfully docked, delivered around 5,000 pounds or so of cargo to the space station. And I remember Doug asking many times, how many Progress machine vehicles go up there every year, and how many American ones go up, and European Space Agency. And we would add up the total, and, you know, we get to an average of 60,000 pounds of stuff per year. And that's true. And they're still going up. This was Progress ship number 75. So many cargo vehicles launched from, you know, by Russia. Let me drop it. There was a lot of work trying to get to Mars. We sent many rovers up back in 90. Land on Mars, and that opened up. And I think rode around on Mars successfully, and it was first rover by the United States to go anywhere. We didn't have a rover on the moon. And since then, we launched two other rovers called Opportunity. 3 months, and they went on for 6 years, 14 years. And now we have a nuclear-powered, they were solar panels, all those rovers. Now we have a nuclear-powered one. Radioisotope thermoelectric generator presently run called Curiosity, landed back in 2012, still riding around. And based on that design, there's another rover called now Perseverance that will be launched in a couple of months, July 17th. And that will land in Earth in a Jezero crater. And it's got a couple of new things. It's a little bit bigger than the last Curiosity. It's still riding around. A little bit bigger, a little bit heavier. And one of the experiments I have on they have on there is called Moxie. And Moxie's going to take the atmosphere of Mars, convert it to oxygen. And Dick would always want to know how much oxygen we're going to need, you know, to survive, you know, one person. You're going to need special launches just to make all the oxygen you're going to need for people to breathe, and liquid oxygen for the rockets to eventually take off, and so on and so forth. And this one will make probably about a quarter so of oxygen if it's successful. And they want to test it, make sure it works. Sure enough, maybe they will launch larger oxygen producing machines to Mars in the future. And one of the experiments they have is a helicopter we used to talk about. And they couldn't believe that they were going to set a helicopter up there. So he used to ask countless questions about the helicopter. You know, how long are the blades? And what blades are 4 feet long? How fast are they going? 50 times minute. And, one question after the other, and we used to go down the list, and sure enough, that will be launched with Perseverance in July. So, one of the things that they're going to do on that mission is collect core samples. All the other previous rovers that have gone up, you know, has an arm that comes down and drills into the rocks and makes dust and system on board that on board the spacecraft, on board the rovers. This one's going to drill course in.
Rover.
Probably about, maybe about, put it into this canister and collect them all. By the time, you know, the years go by, you're going to have, you know, maybe 20 of these core samples put into the canister. Why are they doing that? Because someday they always said, well, we're going to send a mission to Mars to return these samples so that the scientists could really analyze them on Earth. You know, we have great sampling detecting machines on these vehicles, but they say there's nothing like getting the samples back to Earth to really have a ball on Earth. NASA has came up with a final design on how they plan on getting these eventually back to Earth. To orbit Mars and eventually send a lander down to Mars, and wherever Perseverance will be at the time, you know, might be many, many miles away from where that. Combined mission between us and the European Space Agency. So you'll now have an orbiting, let's call it a mother craft, going around Mars, and you'll have another lander going down to the planet somewhere near the rover. So with that, you'll have the lander sitting there, and the plank will roll out, and you'll have a little rover, small rover, leave the will drive over to where Perseverance is, where the rover is sitting, which had landed back in 2021, and here it is years later. This rover will pick up the sampling of the sample kit of 20 core board pieces, each one identified. This way they know where it came from. It will drive back to the lander that just landed, drive up a ramp, and with that, there'll be a rocket attached to this lander. And the rocket should be around 9 feet tall. They say 9.2 feet, feet tall, roughly 2 feet, almost 2 feet in diameter. And this rocket will have two stages, and they'll both be solid fuel rockets. That will be a lot less complicated than having liquid rockets. And there'll be a robotic arm there. It will take the samples and put it into this rocket, and then it will launch off the surface of Mars. Now, Mars is, the gravitational pull is nowhere near what we have here. It's about one third, you know, 3,800ths of a G. So roughly one third of the gravity that we have here. Rocket will take off, go to orbit, and will rendezvous with this orbiting spacecraft that originally it came with. After doing that, there'll be a rocket on board that orbiting spacecraft, the mothercraft, and we'll push it all the way back to Earth. And roughly, well, they have actually a year in mind for this. It will be 2026. The sample return mission will come down through the atmosphere with a heat shield and land in the Utah desert.
KD2FIU question.
Hi, George. Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Paul. How long will it take to come back from that orbital launch back to Earth? How long will that take?
Each time there's an alignment between Earth and Mars, it's roughly 6 to 8 months, depending. So that's what they'll do. Yeah, you know, you'll have a launch from here, from Earth, and that'll take, let's call it 6 to 8 months to get there. Now it's going to take a long time before this rover could get to Perseverance. Before you know it, it's 2 years later. And roughly every 2 years, a little longer than 2 years, roughly every 2 years, Earth and Mars come close to one another, George. So at that time, they'll launch, and again, they'll take roughly 6 to 8 months to return to Earth. Back to you, George.
Thank you. Thank you. That's, I didn't know. Thank you. And that's a good answer there, because 6 to 8 is better than years or something like that. I guess it would be the gravitational pull along with the initial thrust to get out of their orbit, and then it would be the pull of the Earth pulling it back, correct?
Eventually they get, you know, once they get away from the gravity well of Mars, and then Earth will pick it up and start pulling it back. Next thing you know, it's going faster and faster. And by the time it gets back to Earth, it's going 25,000 miles an hour. It might only be going, you know, 12,000 miles an hour when it leaves Mars orbit. And then, you know, the speed will pick up as you get closer to Earth. And vice versa, when we launch Perseverance, this big rover, this July, it won't land until roughly February. So you're looking at 8 months to get to Mars before it lands at Jezero Crater. Eventually, as time goes on, it slows to, you're going to lose 5,000-6,000 miles per hour as time goes on, and then it'll start picking up again. And by the time it gets to near Mars, you're traveling 13,000 miles an hour. You got two things that you can do. Either go directly into the atmosphere, like Perseverance will do. In this case, it won't go into orbit. Ascent vehicle mission would do. And you'll have a land to separate from that mothership, go down and land near the existing riding rover Perseverance that's going to be launched in July 17th. Meet up with that, wherever it might be at the time, and then collect the samples with its own little rover, put it back onto the 9 foot by almost 2 foot diameter solid booster rocket, launch with a solid booster first stage, and then that will separate and has another solid booster for the second stage, and that will continue on and dock with the orbiting spacecraft. After that, once the canister is located, attached to the mothership, and then that mothership has its own rockets, and that will fire powerful rockets to break the orbit. So that's it. Interesting thing. Dick would love this story. Any comments? Is there any questions or comments before I continue? Okay. I sent over to Roy's site a story about the Starlink, missions. Stand by one. Okay. Starlink is a broadband system by SpaceX, and they recently launched another 60 satellites to orbit, and what they did was that brings them up to a total of 420 satellites in orbit. So they say you can see these satellites, right after you launch them, if you're in either dusk or dawn location. And sure enough, in the Netherlands, there was a guy with a camera that took pictures of it. And I had sent. D2GS website, so you'll be able to click on it. And it's a YouTube. And, it's very short. It's not that long. Somebody filming this, and you can't believe how many, very well done. How many, looks like stars floating through the air at a tremendous speed, relative to the background stars. Interesting to see, and you can see what people are complaining about. A week or two ago, we had another ham from Western Nebraska check in. And I believe he works in one of the hospitals out there, and he saw the same type of thing from a previous launch. And the way he described it was, he went out and he saw these things, and all the doctors and nurses or people that were working in this hospital went outside to look at it, and they couldn't believe, how bright this was. And, this train of 60 satellites flying through the air, through the atmosphere. Still low, they're only maybe 190 miles up. They didn't get to the final location of roughly 300 miles up. So, the way he described it, he was pretty impressed. Now, after seeing this YouTube, I could see why. If it looked anything like this YouTube that I sent over to Roy, I could see why him and the workers he was with were really impressed in what they were looking at. Let me drop it. Any questions or comments? Okay. Nothing on that. Let's see. We do have a launch coming up in May. You have two people that are going to be launched on top of a Falcon 9 rocket, and astronaut Robert Behnken and Douglas Hurley are going to be sitting on top of this Falcon 9 rocket down in Florida on Launch Complex 39A. The last mission with people that launched from there was the shuttle mission, Atlantis, in 2011. So here we are all these years later. And they plan on going up and docking with the International Space Station. First time we can send people since 2011. So that's going to be some feat. Now with the pandemic going on, the NASA administrator Bridenstine is requesting that people don't leave their home in all the different possible locations that they usually do show up. Sometimes you get, a big launch, you'll get like a million people down there to watch something incredible. Like a manned launch that hasn't happened since Atlantis went up. So that's going to be a problem for NASA. You know, I guess they could say, if you're going to come out, make sure you're 6 feet apart. Make sure you got a mask. I don't know. I don't even know if there's a mask requirement in Florida like it is here in New York. I mean, if I go to a supermarket, 100% of the people have a mask out here. I'm not suffering. And 100% of the workers, it's really good. I would say half people have gloves of some sort. So I would imagine if they do go down to Florida, I hope they stick to those rules and keep a social distance. I don't know how they can do that. There's pictures of what this looks like. The last Atlantis fight. There's a bridge down there in Titusville, Florida, and they're shoulder to shoulder on this bridge. I mean, it looks like New Year's Eve, so that would not be a good thing. But what is going to be a very good thing is if these two guys get off the ground safely, dock with the space station. That NASA has gone through a lot of trouble putting the docking collar up there. They call it the IDA, International Docking Adapter. They've successfully docked with it once with a test Dragon vehicle that went up to successfully and docked with them. And they want to make sure that, you know, it was a crew vehicle. They want to make sure they could do it and then return it to Earth safely. In fact, they come back and land in the Atlantic Ocean, not the Pacific. And that went very well. And I remember when it was docked there, people that were on the International Space Station, astronauts go inside, poke around in there, and then leave, and then it undocked and landed in the Atlantic. Well, this time they're going to bring crew up there, and they're going to stay for a while, that's what I understand. They're not going to stay like 5 days or a week or something. I think they're going to stay a couple of months, maybe, and then undock and come back and land in the Atlantic Ocean with four big parachutes. Oh, okay. And there will be a news conference in this regard starting on May 1st. If you go to the NASA website, you bring up their video. They're going to have people talking about this at 11 o'clock on AM, May 1st. They'll have Jim Bryden sign, the administrator. People speaking about it. Gwen Shotwell, she's the president of SpaceX. She'll be speaking about it around 12:30. And then the crew themselves, you know, Robin Benkin and Doug Hurley, both have flown before on shuttle. They'll actually be interviewed at 2 p.m. on May 1st, so I'll be looking forward to that. And if you miss it, NASA always tends to, put that on again. You'll be able to see it somewhere along the line. So I've seen interviews with these guys before. They're very good. And once that's done and final, and they come back and land in the Atlantic Ocean. After that, they're going to start in with crews of four on board that vehicle. And these are reusable Crew Dragon vehicles. So they'll be able to go up, leave four people on, and the vehicle always stays with them. You always have to have as many seats on board the space station as you have to go back. If it was a disaster on the space station, everybody would have to leave. So, you'll have standard crew on board instead of the normal six. You're going to have now seven. Three would always be on board from the Russian Soyuz vehicle. And you'll have four on a regular basis, from year in, year out now, with the Crew Dragon vehicle. And they're going to take turns between SpaceX launching the Crew Dragon, or Boeing, which is getting their act together with the Starliner. They've had some problems. they both have problems, but they're working it out. Starliner will eventually be flying to the space station as well, and you'll be able to send four people up at a time with that. Starliner had some problems on a test. They wanted to test and dock with the space station, similar to what I mentioned before that the Dragon did, you know, without a crew 2 marches ago. Dock with the space station, check everything out, have the crew go inside, that's on board the space station, leave, have it come back down and land in the air. It's going to land on land in Nevada. So, on a regular basis, you know, one will go up and the other one will go up. Once they're both functional, you always have four people going up on a space station, on either the Starliner or on Dragon crew vehicle. And that will be it. That will increase the science, the amount of science that goes on the space station. And most of these guys are hams, and you'll still have school contacts. Right now, you don't have any school contacts. You can't put a class together to with the virus out there to talk to the astronauts. Once we get past that, you'll have they already have now a brand new Kenwood radio up there with, I think, 50 watts out, better than the old one, and installing that in the Columbus module. And they're sending another radio up for the Russian side for the Zarya module. And I think that's going up very shortly. So, you have seven people. Most, you know, if not, sometimes all of them, but some of them are at least hams. You know, maintenance on board the space station, you know, you need at least three people for that, so you get very little science time out of that. You have six people, you usually get around 35 hours of science time by having the seven science time they say 35, they actually say 40 hours of time, you know, because he could dedicate all of his time to, you know, that extra person. So you're actually doubling the science by having either crew drive or the Starliner by Boeing. So I'm going to end a little earlier. If anybody has any comments or questions, you can call now.
WB2GXM.
For the TechNet. In honor of K2RIW.
WB2GXM.
GXM, go ahead.
WB2GXM, I just heard. Pretty devastated.
I know, it was a shock. Chris, his son, got on in the beginning and that told us that. None of us knew it, so we've had a lot of comments early on, but Dick would want the TechNet to continue on no matter what. So we're going to do that, and that's what we're doing. But we had a lot of comments. So I know you're a little, you checked in late, so yeah, it must be shocking. Anybody that's listening, Dick K2RIW has passed on, and unfortunately, it's a terrible night as far as that goes. Back to you.
Glad that the TechNet will go on. Nothing else to say. WB2GXM listening and clear.
And I'll shut down a little early. I'm going to turn it over to you, Roy. useful things here, but they're not as thrilling right now as, for that type of you know, mundane information that we can cover my main topic. That's good. Back to you, Roy. AC2GS, this is WS2N for the Space Net Report for the TechNet.
AC2GS, KD2FRU, I would like to comment to Paul.
Yes, sure, George. Please, feel free.
Okay, thank you, Roy. Paul, great report, as always. And during the last couple of minutes here, as I joined in, because I couldn't be in here earlier, I just learned. Paul, great report. And, yeah, okay. Of course, a great man. Thank you. KD2FRU, clear.
Okay, thanks for that, George. And yeah, he was a terrific guy. I still listen to his nets all the time. And it was always fascinating. New hams were really into this, you know. Gravity and radio waves, bending of waves, you know, speed of light, you know. How long does, you know, does it take to transmit to the moon and different planets? And, you know, you listen to him and you learn a lot. And before you know it, he would start asking me questions. I actually followed the space program my whole life since I was a kid. And the next thing you know, we started doing this on a regular basis. So that's what happened with me. And I'll turn it over to Roy. Roy, over to you, AC2GS, WS1.
Okay, thank you very much, Paul. And as no doubt most of you experienced, because I've only been here for about 2.5 years, I started out as a guy who was supposed to read the mailbag question. George, thanks for your comments. Does anyone else have any comments, questions, answers, statements, what have you, before we wind it down for tonight?
KD2MNZ.
Yes. What would you like to say?
I just get in on the tail end of the conversation. Somebody had some bad news, so I just talked, you know, got that tail end. What's going on?
Dick, K2RIW, passed away this morning. Dick was the guy who ran this TechNet from 1982. He stepped away about a month ago, and we were hoping that it was a temporary thing, but he passed away this morning. And we found out about it around 8:05, 8:10 tonight.
You're not talking about Dick Cetron, are you?
No, I'm talking about Dick Nadel.
Oh, Roger. Okay. Thank you. I feel better now. Okay. All right. I didn't know Dick Nadel. I know Rich Cetron. Okay.
Okay. Anyone else with any comments or questions or answers tonight?
Katie Trojan, any comments?
Yes, Craig.
I originally had another question on my way home when you guys were talking about Dick, but now after hearing this sad, I feel so sorry, and I'm sorry about him.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Craig. Yes, we're all upset and kind of speechless, which isn't very useful for Annette if you're speechless, but, you know. Human beings are human beings, but I appreciate what you just said.
Yeah, we'll all miss him. He was a great guy. Plus, I just got the email on my phone and eventually shared the news with my family, and they're all upset.
Yeah, it was sudden for every single one of us. So yeah, and I'm sure there are people who haven't listened to the entirety of this net who just caught little bits and pieces and don't quite know what we're talking about, and they'll find out later on. But it was a shock to all of us.
Still be with us in spirit when we still have the TechNet.
Yes, indeed. I would like to think that this stands as a memorial to the time and effort that Dick put in for 38 years nonstop for this technical net. I hope that people will continue to visit and continue to participate and make this into a viable net. It has been in the past, it has been in the present, and I hope it continues to be in the future as well.
GXM.
Yes, Rich.
Good to talk to you tonight, Roy. Wish it could be under better circumstances. It occurs to me that we have a wealth of recordings which will now stand as testament and fond memories of Dick on the archive, WB2GXM.
Totally agree with that.
Yeah, thank you, Rich. Yeah, I've mentioned more than a few times MyKC2NJI has a website, amateurradio.tv, and he has more than 12 years of Dick's technical net archived on audio file. You can, unfortunately, you can't travel all the way back in time to 1982. Otherwise, I would have loved to have that opportunity, but you can go back to the years where Mel K2KEY was his co-host, explaining to people how to calculate complex impedances in their head using the Pythagorean theorem. You had John, who is also a silent key, KC2WGB, for his words of wisdom on the technical net, and always the constant being Dick, K2RIW.
Does feel very sad, but hey, he'll still be with us in spirit.
Yeah, I hope, he's kind of touched about all of us in one way or another and had an effect upon all of us. I tend to think all for the better. And so that aspect of him will continue in each and every one of us as we go on in life and touch other people and affect them, hopefully, for the good. So, it's the old phrase of passing it on. You get something from someone else, and instead of giving it back to them, you give it back to the next guy in line, and you just extend the line as far as the eye can see.
I suppose for his final wishes, I think you should be the leader of the TechNet, Roy. You have so much knowledge, just as much as he has.
Well, I appreciate that, Craig. I don't know. I think we knew different things about different things. Very, very smart man, and I learned a great deal from him. I kind of, by inertia, fell into this. As I mentioned, 2.5 years ago, Dick kind of came over, sent me an email, and asked if I'd be interested in doing something for the net, and he suggested that the mailbag that John KC2WGB, who passed away, could use someone. So I said, yeah, sure, but most people didn't send any mailbag questions, and so I riffed on science and physics, and Dick liked it more than anything else I could do. If I could supply him with an hour or two of the puzzles, he would have loved that. I had to kind of, I couldn't tell him I had five puzzles because he'd have me doing five puzzles a night. Just kind of fell into it, I guess, and I hope I can do it justice.
As someone that's just as knowledgeable as him, I think you're the man to talk to and to ask all these questions. Nothing else really for me to say. KD2OGB.
Well, thank you very much, Craig, for your kind words. Does anyone else have any thing that they feel like saying or asking or telling? You know, we have about 4 minutes on our clock, but if no one has anything to say, I'll shut it early. But if you got anything, please feel free.
This is KB2IQN, so I'll just leave off with, my dad really loved puzzles.
Thank you, Chris. Yes, I realize that. I would listen in rapt attention when he was discussing with Steve on the UHF repeater. He would come on, and Steve would be driving back and forth from work, and your father would tell him a physics puzzle question, and then they would discuss it for an hour or more during Steve's ride home. I enjoyed playing with those puzzles with your father. He was the one constant guy who would pretty much always try and figure it out and discuss it with me. And it just wasn't a yes or a no with your father. He really wanted to jump into it and look at it from all angles and suss it out. So it was as much a pleasure giving him a puzzle as hopefully he got working it out.
Yeah, I still likewise enjoy working puzzles out with him as well. Often I get things right, and occasionally I get things wrong, and that's part of the fun too. So, yes, totally agree.
Yeah, one of the many, many things I'm going to miss. But thank you, Chris, for giving us the news at the beginning. Thanks for sticking around to the end. My heart goes out to you and your mother and the rest of the family. I'm a little bit less speechless than I was, at 8 o'clock, but I'm still kind of speechless over the whole darn thing.
You're not the only one. Enjoy. Or at least, totally true. I totally agree.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris. I really do appreciate your presence here tonight. Once again, want to explain to everyone that this has been another edition of the Limar Technical Net, an edifice that has been going on since 1982. Over many, many, many decades, thanks to Silent Key Dick, K2RIW, who just passed away this morning, unfortunately. And we'll be back next Sunday night at 8 o'clock, and we'll do it all over again. So please come with questions. If you have questions but you can't be here, send them via the mailbag. Whatever ways, and please participate and keep the technical net alive. If you want to contact me, if you want to give me a topic or a question or mailbag questions or puzzles, or you want to convey something over to Paul with the Space Report, you just email it to mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And the link to Paul's YouTube video that he mentioned tonight can be found at roy.ac2gs.com. And archives, the last 12-plus years of the technical net are available at MikeKC2NJI's site called amateurradio.tv. And here's a bit of wisdom from one of the wisest men that I knew, Dick K2RIW, and that is, be kind to each other. And if there was ever a meaningful epitaph, a great short line that says it all, it's that. Be kind to each other. So this is AC2GS Roy here. And we're going to call it a night. And I am clear. Until next week, guys. Be safe. Don't be panicking, but don't be... scared to death, get bored by the whole thing. The virus is still serious, so take it seriously. So this is AC2GS, and I'll be clear.
WB2BXO here. Been trying to get a word in edgewise to Echo Link to express condolences to Chris.
Okay, Frank. I'm sure he's still listening. If you want to say a few words, please feel free.
KD2FRU.
Yeah, KD2FIU recognized. Yeah, I would like to say a few words. I really sympathize with Chris, first of all, since my dad, Whiskey 2 Lima Oscar Zulu, became a silent C, a silent key. I can't even speak straight at this point, from COVID pneumonia at the age of 98, back on April 13th. Almost 2 weeks ago now. He was a CW man from way back in 1938, and I'll send Roy some additional information. Okay. I think I was present on either one of the first technical Mets, or perhaps the first technical Met, in... when was it? You said 38 years, so around 1984 or thereabouts, I guess. And I've been on many, many sessions since then. And I also met Dick, of course, as Roy probably knows, was a regular attendee at the Kings County Radio Club Field Days and sat there all, literally the whole night, talking tech with us. I don't think he ever actually operated at our field day, but he sat there and gave us the benefits of his wisdom all night long. Anyway, I'm going to time out the repeater, and I know you guys want to shut it down. WB2BXO.
You know, Frank, if you want to, you can go on for as long as you want. I just stopped it at 11 because that's the time that Dick reset the tech net for. But if you have more to say, please feel free. I'm here to listen.
Okay, Roy. I appreciate it. Really not that much more to say at the moment. I know, despite the so-called lockdown, many of us have to get up for work in the morning. Like Dick, I'm retired and do freelance work at home. I know you have a real job as a doc, and so do a lot of other people here have, real stuff to do in the morning. But Dick's really going to be missed. He's really been an inspiration on here. I'll do what I can to support you guys via Echo Link and help you keep the net space report and physics report and stuff going. So that's three for now. WB2BXO in Northeast Philadelphia, formerly active on the TechNet from Brooklyn, 73.
Okay, very good, Frank, and I'm sorry for your loss. I did not know about your father. And you had a privilege that I didn't. Unfortunately, when I joined the Kings County Radio Club, Mel K2 KEY was suffering from his pancreatic cancer and passed away soon after. So, unfortunately, I never had the opportunity to meet.